WXCO 1230 AM, W255DN Wausau, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Cammie McCormick. A gunman opened fire at an ICE facility in Dallas this morning, killing one detainee and wounding two others. They were in a van, and the suspect fired indiscriminately, according to acting ICE Director Todd Lyons.
Dallas Police Department and Texas Department of Public Safety did a great job with the ICE officers on the ground to secure that location. From all accounts, there was only one shooter involved, but the FBI will do their thorough investigation. They'll follow every lead, his associates, and see if anyone else was involved that time.
He identified the suspects as 29-year-old Joshua John. He left behind a bullet etched with an anti-ICE message. CBS News Justice correspondent Scott McFarland says it raises questions about the security of federal buildings.
That's one of 9,000 or so federal offices and federal complexes in America. 9,000. There are thousands of federal protective service officers. That there's only so much manpower to protect all of these places. The vulnerability of federal complexes, federal employees, including those involving immigration and customs enforcement, have been a profound and growing concern here in Washington that have today broken through.
Ukrainian President Zelensky spoke at the UN General Assembly today and said Russia's president has brought about a deadly arms race with his invasion of Ukraine.
And every year that this war goes on, weapons become even more deadly.
Secretary of State Marco Rubio met in New York today with Russia's foreign minister. And President Trump's envoy Steve Witkoff said progress on ending the war in Gaza could be coming soon. An energy company is settling for hundreds of millions of dollars over a wildfire from 2021. More from CBS's Matt Piper.
Xcel Energy says it will pay $640 million to settle lawsuits that allege the Minneapolis-based company was responsible for starting Colorado's most destructive wildfire. Two people were killed and about 1,000 homes destroyed by the Boulder area fire in December 2021. Even with the settlement, Xcel says its equipment did not cause or contribute to the fire and is not admitting any fault.
A new presidential walk of fame was unveiled at the White House today, and Stacey Lynn reports one picture will raise eyebrows.
The White House shared a video on social media of the West Wing colonnade, which now features a wall of portraits of every U.S. president, except one. In the spot where former President Biden's picture would be, there's a photo of the notorious Otto Penn instead. President Trump shared his plan earlier this month in an interview with the Daily Caller, telling them, quote, "This is going to be very controversial."
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
You're listening to 98.9 WXCO, Wausau's home for Matinair on Air, weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
ABC capitulating, pulling Jimmy Kimmel off the air. Mark Jacob.
Fascists look for pretexts. They want excuses to do terrible things. The right wing is looking for excuses to become even more authoritarian than it already is. The Turk thing is their pretext. 2 months ago, Trump was posting about getting rid of Jimmy Kimmel. It didn't have anything to do with Charlie Kirk. Not a thing. That's just a pretext.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Matinair on Air.
The borders are. Tom Homan was investigated for accepting $50,000 from undercover FBI agents.
50 grand in a fast food bag as a payoff. If Kamala Harris would have accepted a fast food bag full of fast food, it would have been congressional hearings, yes. 24 hours on every network, yep, that hated them.
It's corruption palooza, man.
Yeah. Matinair on Air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Is getting vaccinated on your to-do list? We can help you check that off.
You've got this.
Yes, you do. See how we've got you at yougotthis.usaging.org. A message from the Aging and Disability Vaccination Collaborative, powered by U.S. Aging.
A small conversation can make a big difference. Asking someone if they're okay is important. And during this Suicide Prevention Month, check in. And remember, 988 is always open. A message from the Civic Media Radio Network. You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wxco.fm/contest-terms.
98.9 WXCO, Wausau's real news and great conversation, and home for the Todd Allball Show, Monday through Friday from 2 to 4.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO and on the Civic Media app. Also again on YouTube, youtube.com, and search the 98.9 WXCO channel. I am Chad Holmes, joined again by former Wausau West High School head football coach Jason Foster. Coming up, we will recap week 5 of the high school football season, look ahead to week number 6, and our special guest. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll be talking to Vince Dinkle, the head football coach of the Marathon Red Raiders. They earned their second win of the season, a 40-0 win last week at Colby. So we'll talk to Coach Dinkle about his first season as the head coach at his alma mater and talk about the rest of their CWC large season. And then coming up at 7:06, it's our student-athlete guest for this week, and a young man, a senior from Athens High School, Evan Pacell. He's had a terrific season, both rushing the football and on defense, leading rusher, leading tackler, as Athens, after a bit of a tough season a year ago, is 4-1 so far this year as well. So that's our lineup for tonight on the Big High School Sports Show. Good evening to you, Jason Foster.
Good to be here.
Good to be seen and good to be here on a beautiful Wednesday evening. Should have done the show outside, but we'll do it here indoors. And let's jump right in because we are now just past the midway point of the high school football regular season. May not feel like it outside, but we are there right now. And let's start with the Wisconsin Valley Conference, as we tend to do. This week we'll start with the first place team, the DC Everest Evergreens. Everest is now 3-0 in the conference, 3-2 overall after beating Marshfield at Steam Stadium last Friday night, 37-15. Marshfield now 1-4, 1-1 in the conference. Corbin Enzenroth, a third consecutive big night rushing, at least 150 yards three straight weeks. He had 30 rushes, 157 yards, and two scores for DCE. Sophomore quarterback Ty Rohde was 7-15, 105 yards, three touchdowns. Xavier Edwards, again, he has not had the number of catches maybe expected, but he's still very, very dangerous. He had just two catches, but they were both touchdown catches. Total of 65 yards. Hayden Carlson continues to run the ball well for Marshfield. He had 12 rushes, 137 yards, and a score. Ethan Femmel, one of the two quarterbacks that continue to play for Marshfield, was 6 of 7, 61 yards. But remember when we were talking about Everest and that rough night against River Falls and they were 0-2? They've turned it around pretty nicely the last 3 weeks.
Yeah, for sure. And obviously, I would say, coach were here, he'd be telling us that it all probably starts at the line of scrimmage, and I think having seen Everest a couple times, that's where their strength lies in that team. They're good up front. Yeah. Once you're good up front, you can do some things on both sides of the ball. When you're able to run the ball, especially with the injury at quarterback and playing a younger guy there, that ability to run the ball and to rush it 30 times. I mean, it's not usually when we get these big numbers and these consistent numbers from these high school running backs, they're popping off big runs and have those 10-yard average. So 30 carries, 150 yards, that's tough work. And lines don't put in good holes, and Marshfield plays good defense. So a nice balance there. Looks like with only the 15 attempts, they're still kind of figuring out what they have at quarterback right now, but you hit it on the head. When you have an athlete like Xavier Edwards, he doesn't have to catch a lot of balls to have a big impact on a game. So, and again, it looks like their defense had a nice week again as well, holding a team like Marshfield to 15 points. That's good. It looks, they appear to be gaining some momentum.
And I'm curious to see if they get to a point, because they haven't had the situation yet, to play from behind, to see whether or not the quarterback position does become a bigger factor. Because as you said, right now they got the running game going well, got the defense going well, and they've also been ahead in these games. I'm curious to see it. And Everett's goal would be, hey, we don't want to see that for a while because we're always ahead and running the ball and doing defense. But again, I'm curious to see if when Rhodey gets into that situation, what the Evergreens may have.
Yeah, and I think probably as time goes on, this was his second start, and as he goes through the season, probably what they do in practice changes a little bit each week. They have a little bit more in their toolbox when they come to the game on Friday night. So I would bet if push came to shove, he would probably get those more attempts. It'll be interesting to see how he does, but thus far he's been efficient and done what they've needed him to do.
Wausau West and Wisconsin Rapids, we were at Tom Field last week for that one game we had right here on WXCO, and West held off Rapids 14-12. 3-2 now for the Warriors, 2-1 in the WVC. Rapids still looking for that first win, 0-5 and 0-3. Miles Wahlvogel, 17 rushes, 77 yards and a touchdown. Shea Jones, 3 catches, 53 yards and a touchdown. Joel Gravine, 11 of 16, 123 yards and a score. Sawyer Brooks had a nice night running the football for Wisconsin Rapids, 19 rushes, 95 yards and a touchdown. Owen Richardson, 19 of 38, 191 yards, a touchdown and 2 picks. Rapids scored twice in the fourth quarter. They scored with 13 seconds to go. Needed a 2-point conversion to tie. Could not do it. They did recover an onside kick, but really did not have enough time and enough arm strength in the rain to get downfield. So I would say for Wausau West, bottom line is you got the W. You're 2-1 in the conference. That's where you want to be right now. Wisconsin Rapids, they played much better football. And actually, I was impressed with what we saw with Wisconsin Rapids. They were able to run the football a little bit. I thought their quarterback handled himself pretty well. A couple of picks, but still. And for Wisconsin Rapids, defensively, I thought they were pretty solid after having some rough goals of it. So for Coach Mike Krenz, a step forward. But starting with West, may not have been pretty, but you got the W, and that was the big factor.
Oh, I think that's huge, right? I think they did enough, I think, is the best way to describe last Friday night. Obviously, both teams played in it. The second half conditions got a little wild with all that rain, but I think everybody kind of experienced that in this area last Friday night. But they did enough. I think defensively in the first half is what kept them in the game. I think what took us a minute to get some things, or took the Warriors a little bit to get some things going offensively. But if you kind of look at the stat lines, right, this is kind of who and what they are and what they've been. Like they're still working hard to establish that run and having some success, but not a ton. Shea Jones is still a really nice target for us and finds a way to get open and usually finds the end zone once a game. Joe Gravine continues to be efficient. And then, like you said, Coach Krenz, I mean, he has to walk out of that. You're never happy coming out with a loss, but I would imagine there's a lot of talk in that program about establishing their culture, trying to see what their identity is, what the senior leadership's going to look like. And I would have to say they walked out of that game, in addition to being very wet, thinking that they did some things really well. I thought they showed a ton of character on both sides of the football. As a head coach, I'm always looking for, did we compete? And I think Coach Krenz can definitely walk in that end zone after the game and talk about how those kids competed right up to the final whistle and realistically gave themselves a chance to win the football game right up until the final play.
Hudson went to Gerke Field and for the second straight year defeats Stevens Point, this time around 24-14. So Hudson stays perfect. They're 5-0. They're 2-0 in the Big Rivers. Stevens Point now 4-1. They're still undefeated in the conference, 2-0. Cooper Adair, 6 of 11, 140 yards throwing, 23 rushes, 93 yards, and a touchdown rushing. Peyton Pingle, 61 yards rushing and 2 scores, 4 catches, 64 yards as well. Not a great night for Stevens Point offensively. They had a bit of a tougher time. Trent Breitbach was 14 of 29, 169 yards and a score. Johnny Ananitis had 3 catches, 64 yards and a touchdown. Did not run the ball very well, Stevens Point, on Friday night. And we thought we were going to find out a little bit, and there's probably still now some questions about Stevens Point. They're still in very good shape, both overall and in the conference. But I have to say that Hudson is starting to reestablish themselves as well, because after what happened against DC Everest last year in the playoffs, maybe there were some question marks. But boy, they've done the job so far this year.
Yeah, I see this score after having watching Hudson play a few weeks ago against West, and say what stands out to me through two games of knowing them is their defense. Like, it sounds like we know what kind of number Spash has been putting up against, let's be honest, lesser teams to this point. But it looks like Hudson came in here and played really good defense. I can honestly say I was a little surprised by this score. I didn't think Hudson was a dominant or great team when we watched them play Wausau West and beat them. And I did expect Spash's offense to do a little more. So I think Everest comes out of this game. Obviously, they have it on film, too. Probably they had a nice win against Marshfield, gaining some confidence. So I think this kind of just starts to build up that rivalry game or game for the conference championship at this point, until something else changes. I think it makes it a little more intriguing, and will be interesting to see the matchups this week.
And then Eau Claire North and Eau Claire Memorial, the game that ended inches from the goal line. Eau Claire North held on, defeated Memorial 24-21. Memorial made a great comeback. They were trailing 24-15 after scoring. Eau Claire North led 24-15 after scoring with about 4 minutes left, but then Eau Claire Memorial scored to pull to within three, recovered an onside kick, and stopped. I was told, I did not see this, but somebody was watching the game, that the officials had to take a long look into the pile, inches away from the goal line, and Eau Claire North did not get the call. And they were not thrilled about it, and North able to hold on and earn the W. And all of a sudden, Eau Claire North is now 2-3 overall, 1-1 in conference, but they're 2-1 in games that go towards the playoffs. And all of a sudden, they're putting themselves in a position perhaps to make the playoffs in Memorial 0-5, 0-3.
Yeah, I think this game is kind of probably exactly what both teams in that community thought it was going to be. I think there was a really evenly matched game. I think that it's a big rivalry game. It was close, came down to the last one. Sounds like the officials got to play a role in it at the end. And I just keep thinking that Memorial's just right there, like right ready to get over the hump. I think they've improved, in particular overall as a team and their outcomes and the scores and stuff this year. They look like they're doing good things and competing, right? Like, I think that was the next step for that program. Obviously, coach probably thinks they should have a couple W's at this point, but probably also makes them a dangerous team down the stretch. They're right there. They're looking for that signature win or that breakthrough win. So going to be a tough matchup moving forward. And Eau Claire North, good win for them. Yeah, I mean, like you said, puts them in a position to be in the conversation and potentially get that postseason bid, which would be a huge shot in the arm for that program as well.
They've won two in a row, and they haven't done that very often over the last number of years.
Correct.
Got to feel pretty darn good for the Huskies. Great Northern Conference, Mosinee now 3-2. Overall, 2-1 in the conference after beating Wausau East last Thursday, 35-7, a game that was heard right here on 98.9 WXCO. Lumberjacks are now 1-4, 0-3 in the league. Treve Stoffel again filled the stat sheet with 17 rushes, 143 yards and a touchdown, 7 of 16 passing, 92 yards, but 3 touchdowns, 6.5 tackles, 1 interception. Ian Stahl, 16 rushes, 80 yards, and a score for Wausau East. Xander Klein, 11 of 21, 92 yards, but 3 picks in that game. It was a methodical win for Mosinee, I thought. East came out in the first quarter, a 15-yard touchdown drive, led 7-0. But after that, it wasn't a case where, with the exception of a pick six, where it was lightning strikes, which we saw a little bit of last Thursday night, led to a more than almost an hour 40-minute delay. But they just wore down East, up front especially. Just as the game went on, East had no answers to really slow them down.
Yeah, and that's what we've kind of talked about a little bit, having personally not seen East play this year, but in the games you've watched and then looking at the stats each week, it looks like that's where their struggles kind of begin and end, is at that line of scrimmage. And sounds like they have some athletes, so when they get the time or they have the hole, like, their offense is kind of based in those big plays. And I think obviously we know Mosinee is really well coached and have some really nice athletes on that side of the ball. So if they're able to get pressure on the quarterback, able to play good on the back end, you get three interceptions like that, and that makes a big difference for your opponent on offense as well. And it sounds like Treve Stoffel was his normal wrecking ball self on both sides in this game.
Also Thursday, Medford, a big win, 20-18 over previously undefeated Lakeland. So Medford now 2-3, but 2-1 in the conference. Lakeland 4-1 overall, 2-1 in the conference. Will Wojcik, 19 rushes, 124 yards and a touchdown, a catch for 22 yards and a touchdown for Medford. Luke Kapatoskis had 10 tackles. I'm going to have to get used to that name. I'm doing the game on Friday over at Tom Field when Medford comes in. So, but Medford had three touchdowns, Lakeland had three touchdowns, but Medford got one of their two-point conversions, and all of a sudden Medford right back in the mix in the GNC.
Yeah, I think this was kind of the game we were looking at to see who kind of steps up and kind of separates himself. Obviously, Medford's not separating themselves, but if you look down, the rest of them we're going to talk about too. I mean, there's 4 2-1 teams in this conference. I mean, talk about something that's completely up in the air. And the one thing that isn't up in the air is Tomahawk, right? They're the ones that are undefeated and kind of sitting at the top looking down at everybody else. But sounds like a great game. Sounds like Lakeland competed like crazy. And Medford's right there. I mean, they're not going anywhere. Maybe not their dominant self, but I think everybody who's competing right now, right? Mosinee, Medford, Lakeland, Rhinelander, Merrill, all of these teams sit there at 2-1, and whoever gets to Tomahawk and knocks them off, I think everyone, I mean, this might end up being a 5-way tie for first place in this league.
Merrill now 3-2 overall, 2-1 in the conference, win the war on 64 over Antigo, 35-0. Robbins 1-4, 0-3. Cole Rudai had 16 rushes, 138 yards, and 3 touchdowns for Merrill. Mason Block, 9 tackles, 3 tackles for loss. We had Coach Wodzinski on last week, and he's got to be feeling pretty good now, 3-2. And 2-1 in the conference. Good shape.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of their season didn't start the way they had hoped with those tough non-conference game to start the year. But I think, like you said, he's got to be happy where he's at. Another good win for them. That kind of stacks together three good weeks in a row with 2 good wins, and liking the way their schedule lines up the rest of the season. Again, Antigo appears to struggle to be offensively move the ball and scoring points. So a tough road for them.
Tomahawk, you know, the surprise is the score, 49-7 over Rhinelander. Again, that was played in Rhinelander. Tomahawk stays perfect, 5-0, 3-0 in the conference. Rhinelander 2-3, 1-2 in the league. Cash Olson, 143 yards passing, 2 touchdowns, 68 yards rushing, 2 scores. Tegan Sarazen, 5 rushes, 131 yards. Jet Riley, 2 catches, 75 yards and a score. Rex Riley, 10.5 tackles and a sack. Only points for Rhinelander came on a defensive touchdown. Tomahawk every week proving they're for real.
Yeah, proving they're for real and doing it convincingly. They've won close games. They've had blowout games. I think they even had maybe I'm thinking this wrong. I thought they even had an overtime game.
Against Whitburn.
Early on. So they found a lot of different ways to win, and obviously it looks like they're continuing to grow that as it goes on. Like you said, the week before, Rhinelander scored 28 points, had a great win against Wausau East, and then they roll into town, they get held to 7 and give up 49. So, yeah, I don't know what that speaks. It's kind of hard to get a gauge on who's who and what's what, but the matchups are kind of exciting each week in the GNC.
CWC Large in the Battle of Unbeatens last week. Amherst beat Loyal Greenwood 34-12, 5-0 for Amherst, 3-0 in the conference, 4-1 for Loyal Greenwood, 2-1 in the conference. Don't have numbers on it, but another big win. Amherst has not been threatened in 5 games. They have just come in, and we talked a little bit going into that Loyal High School field. It's a baseball diamond. It's got some dirt out there. It's really I've done games there. It's a little bit of an odd feel over there, but they went in there and they just took care of business. And right now, and of course, Amherst, their biggest game still to come, but boy, they have just been very impressive so far, scoring a lot of points every week.
Yeah, I think we've kind of talked a little bit about, with maybe some hesitancy really early in the season, like is Amherst back, and are they kind of ready to be back at the conference? And I think this week, and they do have big games left, but week by week, they seem to be more and more convincing that they are back, or they are sitting there, and it'll be interesting to see in the big games how things stack up and then what it looks like in their playoff run. And again, side note to this one, Loyal Greenwood, right? Like a team that nobody probably even talked about or thought anything about. 34-12. I mean, it sounds to, I don't know, we don't have stats and didn't see it. I remember seeing some highlights on TV. It looks like they competed. Like they had some plays, and I think they might even cause a couple turnovers in that one. But obviously, Amherst wins that one coming away and feeling really good about where they're at.
Stratford starting to build block by block. It looks like they're, again, working their way in the conference and obviously trying to make a run in the postseason. As Stratford now has won 3 in a row. They defeat Wyoega Fremont on the road 43-14. So Stratford 3-2 overall, but 3-0 in the CWC Large. Wyoega Fremont 3-2, but 1-2 in the conference. Aaron Knetter had 11 rushes, 102 yards, and 2 scores for Stratford. Brady Berg did not throw a lot, but he was very efficient. 4-4, 129 yards, 3 touchdowns. Xander Zawislin had 3 catches, 94 yards, and 2 touchdowns. For Waiawiga, Carter Bertishaw had 11 rushes, 174 yards, and two touchdowns, and was 12 of 22 passing for 68 yards. But we've talked about Stratford. Their defense has been still pretty solid so far this season. Now it looks like the offense is starting to pick up a little steam.
Yeah, I think their ability to run the ball, that's obviously a really nice night for them. Efficient in throwing the ball, probably some good-looking play-action looks for them with that amount of passing and that amount of yardage. But I think this is it. I think Stratford is starting to stack the wins, but realistically, we talk every year about their ability to stack the wins and lesser teams in this conference, so we're still kind of waiting to see the next big matchup they have. Who they are like
well,
this?
Well, they won on the road at Wittenberg.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But then again, Wittenberg this week they lost at Spencer Columbus, 27-8. Spencer Columbus, the first conference win. They're 1-2 now, 2-3 overall. Wittenberg now 2-3, 1-2, putting themselves in a little bit of a box here as we get towards the second half of the season. Jack Haper, 29 rushes, 169 yards, three touchdowns for Spencer Columbus. It was a 20-0 Spencer Columbus second half after a one-point Wittenberg lead at halftime. 70-yard touchdown pass from Bob Davis to Caden Yeager, the only score for the Chargers. So we've seen some of this from Spencer Columbus this year. They've been more competitive than they were a season ago, and it came together for a big W.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've been they have their wins, two now. But they've kind of the other games that had traditionally been big blowouts for them, they've been in those games. Mm-hmm. Some of them even close. So I would say this probably is a contender for a kind of surprise of the week. Wittenberg being where they're at, probably surprise of the week as well. So they have some work to do going down the stretch.
When I saw the score, I thought it was wrong.
Yeah.
I actually went and I dug because I thought that's not right. It must be Wittenberg won 27-8. So no, that was definitely a surprise. And then Marathon went to Colby, played a late afternoon game on Friday. They moved it up and Marathon able to knock off Colby 40-0. So the Raiders now 2-3 overall, 1-2 in the conference. Colby 1-4, 0-3. True Thurs, a big night, 30 yards per completion. That's always a good way to start. 7 of 9, 212 yards, 3 touchdowns. Added 9 rushes, 52 yards, and 2 more scores. Garrett Bracewell, terrific athlete. Very, very dangerous. 3 catches, 87 yards, and a touchdown. Swain Stensel, 10 tackles. And we'll get a chance to talk to Coach Vince Dinkel here in a couple of minutes. But Marathon, they started off with a 33-0 win over Pittsville. Had a couple of really tough losses. Games that could have gone either way against Auburndale that went to the last play. And also against Loyal Greenwood, who's obviously off to a good start. So this Marathon team, I think, generally has been, Spencer Columbus, much more competitive this year.
Yeah, I think obviously, like you said, we'll talk to Coach about it, but I love hearing about what's changed, what's different, right? What is the mindset? What's the attitude? What's the mental toughness these guys are bringing? And one of my favorite parts of getting these stat sheets each week, excuse me, is looking at Truther's numbers. I mean, Truther's, Treve Stoffel, as we go through these big players for these, and what a special young man he is athletically and talented. And so another looks like another fantastic night for him. And when you see his success and pairing it with Garrett Bracewell and the type of athlete he is, so I think it's athletes like that in a new system, I think it definitely gives you the opportunity to win week in and week out.
Merriwood CWC, Edgar over Pittsville, a game that was postponed Friday, played on Saturday, 40-0. So Edgar 5-0, 3-0, Pittsville 1-4, 1-2. Tucker Strite, 6 of 11, 113 yards and a touchdown, 10 tackles, an interception. Landon Lukasko, 4 rushes, 111 yards, a 29-yard touchdown reception as well. Dalton Darr for Pittsville had 19 rushes, 72 yards. Edgar, of course, they played early against Stratford, have not really been challenged in state games. They had that game against the team from Illinois that was a last-second field goal, defensive struggle. But one thing that jumps out, even in that game, Edgar's playing defense.
Yeah, I was going to say Coach Sins was happy again. They pitched another shutout. But I think that's who and what they are. They're kind of their signature. I don't know. I don't know who slows them down in conference play this year. And so it'll be interesting with them bumping up and playing in that Division VI this year, what the playoff run looks like for them.
4 wins in a row for Abbotsford. Falcons win at Assumption 36-6. Abby now 4-1, 3-0 in the conference. Assumption 2-3, 2-1 in the conference. Chase Boulder, 7 rushes, 113 yards, 3 touchdowns. 41 rushes, 294 yards, 4 touchdowns as a team, which is actually a little low for Abbotsford sometimes when they win. Camden Martin for Wisconsin Rapids Assumption had 4 catches for 79 yards and a touchdown, but Assumption could not run against Abbotsford. Had 64 yards on 24 rushes, 2.5 yards average as a team. So when you look at it, when you run big and you stop the run big, that's a great start, a good foundation to win football games.
Yeah, I would imagine Coach Nat Miller was very happy with that effort. And like you said, what are the two key components? You play well up front, which allows you to stop the run and run the football. And looks like they did that last week and kind of still rolling with their run game.
Pacelli got their first conference win, 27-20 at Iola Scandinavia. 2-3 for Pacelli, 1-2 in the conference. Iola is struggling with injury this year, 1-4 and 0-3. Bryce Flaker had a big night for Pacelli, 27 rushes, 131 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 reception, 60 yards and a touchdown. It's got to be frustrating for a team like Iola. It's been traditionally a pretty good program to fight through injuries, have some of your best players. And now, last 2 weeks, they lost in overtime against Assumption and lose a one-score game. And you think, man, if we just had that little bit of extra, that's got to be frustrating, especially for the coaches who see these kids who are standing on the sidelines wanting to be out there, and you're just so close.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely frustrating for those programs. But if we look at the CWC large and small, and we look at the teams we're talking about this year who in years past have kind of been for sure in that bottom three or four, and these other teams like Iola, Pittsville, some of these other ones that we kind of felt were on the cusp of taking that next step and getting there, and it's kind of the roles have been reversed a little bit this year.
And finally, feel bad for Bark River Harris. They made the trip. I saw on the highlights on Friday night. They were waiting. They never got to play. They made the long trip from the UP, and they had their game against Lauderdale canceled.
Yeah, that is tough. That is tough. You get 9, and when you lose one of them like that, you lose it 2-forfeit in the first place, and you find a replacement. So, yeah, real tough luck for them.
We're going to take a one-minute break and then come back and welcome our first guest for tonight, the head football coach of Marathon High School. We'll talk to Vince Dinkle coming up next here on the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO.
What's your idea of fall fun? Maybe it's hitting the trails on a new ATV. Then it's time to call CCU. That's Clover Belt Credit Union. Or if you're thinking of a UTV for hauling wood or hunting, or maybe just because it would make the tasks around your property so much easier, it's time to call CCU. ATVs, UTVs, utility tractors, and their attachments for care of your property. Whether you need it for fun or to get the job done, Clover Belt Credit Union is here to help with the great rate financing you want. What are you waiting for? Life's too short and winter's too long. Thinking about a motorhome or maybe a snowplow for your ATV or utility tractor? Call CCU for great rate financing. And if you're thinking motorcycle, Clover Belt Credit Union has the financing you need for the bike you want. Call or apply online at ccuwausau.com. Check it out. For vehicle loans, for mortgages, for financing fall fun, call Clover Belt Credit Union. That's CCU. Local lenders lending local money. Keeping our community strong.
And welcome back. It is the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app. With former Wausau West High School head football coach Jason Foster, I'm Chad Holmes, and it's time now for our coach guest for this week. And we are very happy to welcome into studio the first-year head football coach at Marathon High School, Vince Dinkle. And coach, thanks for making the short trek over from Marathon tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, the first year, and you know Marathon exceptionally well, obviously, because of going to school there and being so successful in athletics. As you took over this position, what was the first thing that you wanted to establish in this football program?
You know, I wanted to really get people excited about football in Marathon again. You know, it's got a great tradition of sports. And you know, I want kids to be excited. I want parents to be excited. I want, you know, a lot of enthusiasm and you know, positive spirit around the sport of football. And you know, so far I've, in people that I've talked to, I think doing a pretty good job of of getting people excited again about football and marathon, and I'm very, very happy with the progress we're making there.
Yeah, I think I'm hearing the same thing. I think there's a lot of people excited. And I think you hit it on the head, and kind of where I was going to go with my question is Marathon is a very proud sports town, right? You take people from Marathon, and I love all the rivalries with the people down the road over the years and all the different sports. So what that was your goal. What have you done to achieve it? Like, what was your – when were you hired? What was –
It was around March.
Okay. So yep. When you started in March, what did the spring and summer look like before you got to camp? What were some of the first things you did?
Well, first of all, establishing, you know, my face so parents know who I am, because I don't work for the school at all. So I've been an assistant coach for the past couple of years, but stayed kind of behind the scenes. So, you know, getting my face out there, letting people get to know me a little bit, and then, you know, telling them I'm here for communication. I'm here to help your kids achieve what they want to achieve, and I'm here to foster excitement about football. So,
awesome.
Has anything surprised you? Because jumping into the role as the head coach, and I know in talking to coaches, it's often not the things on the field that cause maybe the biggest headaches. It's the dealing with all the other issues. Has anything surprised you in your first go around here as the head football coach?
No. We've got a lot of great kids on the team. So there hasn't been any, you know, oh, my kid should be playing more, my kid should be doing this. And I have not had to deal with any of that so far, and it's been awesome. But, you know, shout out to the Marathon community, because it's filled with a lot of great people. It's been very easy, I think. And shout out to our senior class too. It's filled with a lot of great leaders. You know, great competitors too. They want what's best for themselves, and they want to succeed and achieve. And, you know, they set a great example for the rest of the kids too.
Yeah, tell us a little bit more about them. Give us some names. Tell us who the leaders are. Obviously, we talk about guys like Truthers on here every single week with the incredible things he does and all the different sports he plays as well. But talk about who are the other guys? Maybe the ones we don't hear quite as much about or have fill up the stat sheets but have made a big impact in the program.
Yeah, True is an exemplified leader. He's everything you'd want in a leader. He's great to have on the team, but Cassius Ninnebuck is another guy who's, you know, maybe not as outspoken, and he plays on the offense and defensive line, so doesn't get that shine, but he's the same way. He's a great leader, a great influence for everybody. Another guy is Drew Wolfel. You know, he's another guy who's had success in multiple sports and didn't play at all last year because of an injury, and so it's been great having him back, being involved, and, you know, he's really helped the team this year. Landon Snyder is another guy. Landon is, you know, a little bit of a bulldog mentality. You know, he's a little bit undersized. He's short, but he's strong, and he's not afraid to stick his nose into things, and he's also a great competitor. And then we have some underclassmen that have really stepped up as leaders too. You know, Landon Hilgart is a name that comes to mind. Garrett Bracewell is another guy. So just a lot of kids that, you know, the rest of the team can look up to as an example of how do I carry myself as a player? How do I approach getting better and improving? There's more guys I could name. Those are the top guys that come to mind.
So often the families have this line in these communities, and I know a lot of the names are, you see a lot of them, and you mentioned like being a bulldog with Landon Snyder. I remember covering his mom's games when she went to Newman and won state championships on the basketball court. She was a leader. She was a bulldog. So, and I mean, it's amazing, and I know communities like Marathon, it is truly a family tradition, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's not very many of them anymore, but there's still a kid on the team who's I went to high school with his sister. And so, yeah, it's very tight-knit.
Let me ask you about the season up to this point. You had two really big wins, 33-0 against Pittsville to start it off, and then 40-0 at Colby last week. And then in the middle, you had a couple of games that were probably –
for a coach, the ones that keep you up at night. Auburndale is always so good, and it's such a great rivalry in all these sports with Marathon, and a game that went right down to the wire, and you outgained them, and but unable to get over the hump. And then against a loyal Greenwood squad that looks to be much improved this season with their performances. What did you take away from the wins where you were dominant? Because that has to be feeling good that, hey, when we are rolling, we can really take care of business against some programs that in the past have not been that easy. And then what do you take away from those kind of games, especially early in your coaching career, those games that you think, man, there's probably one play here or one play there that instead of being 2-3, you could be 4-1 and not have your hair fall out too early in your coaching career?
Right. Well, you know, football is a game that comes down to it. The outcome can be decided with 2, 3, 4, 5 plays, and it's that close every single week. And so, you know, in those two games against Auburndale and Loyal, and those two teams are good teams. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be in the playoffs, and they're gonna be making a push in the playoffs. And so props to them. But you know, we played with those teams. We played well enough to win those games, but we shot ourselves in the foot. And so it's a lesson that, you know, you got to play each play one play at a time. You can't get too ahead. You can't get too down on yourself. But, you know, there's going to be some adversity that you got to fight through and keep pushing forward and keep gaining momentum and trying to steal that momentum back. In those two games, you know, I thought our kids did a great job of sticking with it and not, you know, not getting too down on yourself, understanding that, you know, we're not out of this game. We still have more minutes to play and to keep fighting. And they were great lessons because, you know, you can't beat yourself. Mm-hmm. And you gotta do your job, and you gotta control what you can control. So,
and those are kind of the wins within those losses, right? Those are the things that you learn that make you a better team moving forward. You learn from your mistakes, and also gives those athletes the opportunity to learn some life lessons too, right? Like, what am I going to do after this tough play or after this tough loss? I also love each week when we talk to the coaches is drawing the parallels between what happens in high school football and what happens at the college level and at the NFL. I mean, I feel like the last couple minutes when you were talking there, we could have been talking about the Green Bay Packers, right? Like their loss to the Browns last week. I mean, it was the same things happening to guys who make millions of dollars a year, the mistakes they made at tough times. It came down to probably four plays in that game, and it was the difference between winning and losing. So very, very, very interesting parallel there. My kind of follow-up with that one is, too, like we've talked a little bit about Marathon tradition and what a great community and strong it is. You've had a very successful sports career there as an athlete and then went on to play college football up at Major State. Who are your mentors? Like when you look right now and you're kind of blazing your trail and who you're going to be, but who do you model off? What good things do you pick from the coaches that you had over the course of your career?
Well, my football coach when I was in Marathon was Todd Stoffel, who's over in Mosinee right now. He was a great example as far as, you know, he preached discipline, desire, character. All right. And I didn't steal that slogan from him. So if you're listening, Todd, it's still available if you want it. But it's, you know, it's that mentality where, and I've kind of adopted it for myself as chase greatness, be gritty and give your maximum effort. And, you know, so Todd has been a great influence and I still see him around Marathon every once in a while. So it's always fun chatting with him. Adam Jacobson was my basketball coach, and he still is the basketball coach. And his brother Luke is on the coaching staff. And so, you know, those guys are both, they were great coaches in my life. I was a junior when Adam took over as the basketball coach in Marathon, and you know, he's done an absolutely great job. And before I came on here today, Luke said, you should talk to Adam because he's got all the coaching, the coach-isms that you can steal from him. So, yeah, Adam's been great. And then guys I've played with, too, like I graduated with Colin Seibert, who went on to play college basketball. And, you know, he was a close friend of mine, but a guy that I, you know, couldn't let one-up me in any sporting endeavor. So, you know, we challenged each other and pushed each other. So, yeah, he's – I don't know if you classify him as a mentor, yeah. but a friendly competitor and a close friend.
Again, we're talking to Vince Dinkle, the head football coach at Marathon High School here on the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXEO. You bring up Coach Jacobson, Adam Jacobson, when he took over, young guy. Mm-hmm. You're a young guy. I wish I was that young. But coming in now as a younger coach, do you find it an advantage maybe to be closer to the kids' age, or how do you look at that as you start here? Again, we see a lot of younger coaches nowadays. I think we see more and more of them. Do you feel, in terms of connecting with your student athletes, is it a positive?
Yeah, I think so. And I don't want to speak for any of the players. I don't know if that's the reason I've been able to connect with them, but you know, it's all about respect and you know, things like that. It's the times of being, you know, a hard ASS and, yeah. and you know, doing, you know, running kids and yelling at them and all that type of stuff. It's you can't quite do that because you don't want any kid to check out and you know, start to not feel like they are capable of accomplishing what you want them to accomplish. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a delicate balance. You know, you got to be, you don't want to be their friend, but you got to be friendly to them and make sure that they understand that you respect them. And as long as they're giving their effort and they're trying and they show up day after day and try to get better and try to improve, that, you know, I think that's what it comes down to. And, you know, I don't really see it as, because I feel quite a bit older than them.
Well, and one of the things we hear all the time, both in education now, but I think it's as true, if not more true, in coaching, especially in coaching, is, I mean, the kids don't really care how much you know until they know how much care, right? Like, that's kind of the thing. So I think that's how it's changed a lot. Probably back when you played, for sure back when I played back then, and I mean, if we didn't get drinks at practice, and practice would stop and we'd run or up downs or whatever. And that's just not where we live anymore, both from an athlete standpoint and from a parent standpoint. So I think a big part of it is kind of learning that balance and building those relationships and understanding who you can push a little bit more and who you need to kind of hold hands or walk along. I think that's a big part of it. So as you look at your remaining schedule, and I know the football conference has probably changed a little bit since you played, so there are some different teams in there. You've coached for a couple of years now, but as you look at your remaining schedule starting this week with Wauwega, what are your thoughts? How are things stacking up for you?
Well, where we sit right now, we got to approach each game the next 4 weeks as, you know, this is our playoffs start this week. It's every single game from here on out means a lot for us. You know, we got to take care of business. We got to do the little things right, and we got to, you know, approach each day in practice and in the game like this is crunch time, and we gotta start taking care of business. The road is not easy, you know. I don't want to offend anybody, yep. but I think it's the toughest small school conference in the whole state. It's we've got a lot of heavy hitters, and you know, we're trying to establish ourselves to be one of those teams that can make runs.
Establish. That's probably a big word when you come in as the new head coach. I haven't asked, do you have a philosophy offensively and defensively? So often coaches say, this is the way we want to do it. Are you somebody that is wedded to a certain way of running an offense or a defense, or do you look at your kids? What's your thoughts in terms of football philosophy on both sides of the football?
Yeah, my uncle, his name is Steve Dinkle. He was the offensive coordinator at University of Whitewater during their run of a lot of championships. And so that was one of the first things he said to me when I told him I was interested in applying for this job, is think of your philosophy, think of what you want as a program, what, you know, how are you going to win football games, is basically how he described it. And so that's been a huge help. I put a lot of thought into it, and so I'm the defensive guy. Aaron Kerner is my offensive coordinator. He's a former quarterback at Colby, and then played quarterback at UW Stout. And so I let him handle the offense and what we do as far as scheme goes. But, you know, what we want to do is establish ourselves and you know, positive yards on offense. We've got the athletes to hit a big play every once in a while, and so when the opportunity presents itself for a big play, we try and jump on it. And then defensively is just attack the ball carrier, attack the ball, try and get turnovers, be sound, be physical, and, you know, do those little things right and be disciplined while you're doing them. Don't try to do anybody else's job. Try to do your job.
Yeah, I think when you've mentioned a couple times earlier in a previous question about stealing something from another coach or whatever, but I think that's a big part of it. I think
he said he didn't.
Well, he's lying. Because at the end of the day, and one of the things I love about the show is hopefully parents are listening and they can get a little insight into what it's like to be a head football coach. But I mean, there's not much out there that's new, right? When you talk X's and O's and offense and defense, like nobody's recreating the wheel. You're trying to do maybe what you've done in the past, but what somebody else has been doing for years, and you try to become really good at it. So the nuances of coaching are what you talked about, right? Kind of establishing that mindset. What is the attitude of our team? What is our approach from play to play, from series to series, from offense to defense? What do you guys, and part of that, you mentioned earlier, your senior leaders. What, obviously, in-season practice time is spent on offense, defense, special teams, X's and O's, films, that sort of stuff. What have you guys done with your athletes to teach the other stuff, like what the leadership stuff, the communication, how to be a good teammate? What are some of the ways you guys have stressed the importance of those skills?
Yeah, it's really just, you know, when someone's not doing it the right way, call them out, hold them accountable, all right, and correct it when it happens. And then just vice versa, when somebody's doing it the right way, just give them kudos, give them shout outs, make sure the rest of the team knows, hey, that is how we want it done. Trying to put an end to bad habits and reinforcing good habits.
How much fun is it to come back after a 40-0 win against Colby? That's a good program. That's always a good program. I imagine that was a significant win last week. Did that add something for the entire group going now into the final 4 weeks of the regular season?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have two coaches that used to be on the – one used to play for Colby, one used to be on the Colby staff. So that was an important one on our schedule.
Did the kids know that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep, they did. And like you said, Colby's got a great team, and they dealt with some injuries during our game. So, you know, the score is what it is, but they run a great program over there, and you know, they're a tough team and a lot of young guys, so they'll be back in the near future.
When we talk about each season and in doing the show, and Chad used the word before, kind of establish yourself as a program, and then when you apply that to the conference, where do you sit? So we spend a lot of time talking about in the CWC large and small, right? You kind of have traditionally Stratford sitting at the top where you guys, and then for years now, it's kind of been Amherst and Stratford, and then Wittenberg-Burnhamwood's kind of been there. And then from there, we kind of talk about who's in the middle, who's at the bottom, and who's trying to get there. Like, that's a big part of where you're at as a program, right? Like, trying to figure out taking that next step. And what we've noticed this year is some teams who we felt have kind of been strongholds or maybe trending in the right direction are not. And I think you guys are kind of, I feel like, in the opposite of that. Like, a lot of injuries last year, new program, new staff, kind of trending in the right direction. Is that something that you guys talk about? Is where you want to be in the conference and who it is that you want to be able to compete with when it's all done?
Yeah, and like the messaging too is like the experts say whatever they want to say, you know, and the kids, it's up to the kids how good we want to be. You know, everything really comes down to them. I remind them that coaches don't win games, players win games. So it's in their hands. So they don't, even though someone says we're supposed to be here, we have a chance to prove ourselves every single week. And, you know, we try to do our best. We try to do our, you know, all of our little things correctly. And, you know, we prepare throughout the week like we're going to win. We approach pregame like we're going to win, and then we play the game. And at the end of the day, the scoreboard tells us what happened.
And when you find yourself back in the playoffs and doing that, what I find interesting too about these conferences is so often these teams end up in the same 8-team playoff bracket kind of to start the year. So no matter what happens in that first matchup, I feel like every year we see some round twos of those second matchups. So I think that's a great kind of approach to know that whether you beat them or didn't beat them the first time, you got a pretty good chance of seeing them again and getting your payback or revenge or going 2-0.
Were you part of the marathon teams that won playoff games? I think it was like Northern Elite in Athens. Were you part of those teams back in the day when you were in school? Did you have playoff football?
Yes. My junior year, we beat Athens in the first round,
yeah,
and then we lost to Spring Valley.
Yeah.
And then my senior year, I think we beat Crandon in the first round and then lost to Amherst.
So by the way, how good is Amherst this year? Because you saw them, and they seem to be dominant to everybody this year. How impressed were you when you went over there a couple of weeks ago?
Yeah, they have some good players. They definitely have some quality athletes. You know, their running back, I mean, he had a game against us. Yeah. He was tough to tackle. He's a big boy. And then, you know, watching film and stuff, well, I was really impressed with their quarterback and their receiver as well. And up front, they got some big boys, and even their not so big boys, they bring it. And I think they have a pretty good shot to make a run this year.
And again, along the same lines, you having experienced playoff football, I imagine for especially the seniors and bouncing back from what was an injury plague of the year, I imagine that, again, you talk about one game at a time, but it would be a big accomplishment to get back to the playoffs for Marathon, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, this year's senior class, right, they've had success in baseball. They've been the state champion in basketball. And they expect a lot out of themselves. And, you know, that's, you know, I tell them it's, you approach the game the same way as those other sports, and, you know, the sky's the limit. Our future and our team is in your guys' hands. It's really up to you guys.
What types of things do you guys do at Marathon with the size of your enrollment and that sort of thing, with having so many kids who play two or three sports together, and a lot of the basketball, you talked about baseball, probably a lot of track. You might even have some kids who play baseball and track in the spring.
Yeah, some wrestlers, I know.
Yeah, a bunch of wrestlers as well. Yeah. So what is it like working with those other coaches, both whether they help out on your staff or just knowing that you guys are sharing athletes, and knowing once we get to a certain time in the fall, the basketball coaches pull the basketballs out of the closet, and kind of in the summertime, the kids who play Legion play a million Legion games and do summer basketball leagues. So how is that go? Like, what are the relationships with the other programs and the other head coaches?
Yeah, every single head coach in the Marathon program has given me a piece of advice or wish me luck or help me in some format, you know, even the girls head coaches too. They've all been a huge help, especially because I don't know what I don't know yet.
Yep.
And it's challenging in the summer because the kids got to balance so many things. And so, you know, you want to get your time in with your sport, but you don't want to burn the kids out. So it's tough to strike a balance when they're doing so much, but you know, that every coach in Marathon knows we want what's best for our kids. We want them to develop as athletes. You develop that multi-sport athlete, you know, even though they're not working on the specific sport skills, they're becoming better, and they will help whatever team, whatever sport in that way by getting experience in all these different things. They're becoming better overall athletes.
I always think it's great too, being coached by other people, right? Different coaching styles and different levels of energy and different communication styles. I think it just makes them better across the board.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to wrap it right there. We're coming up on the top of the hour, but Coach Vince Dinkle, Marathon Red Raiders, congrats on a great win last week. Best of luck against Wauwega this week, and good luck in the playoff push, and thanks for stopping on by.
Thank you.
That's Vince Dinkle, our coach guest for this week here on the program. We will have our student athlete guest coming up just after the news.
Evan Pacell. He is from Athens High School. He's having a big year in eight-player football, so we'll talk to him coming up in just a few minutes. Again, one more hour to go. We'll look ahead to week number six as well in the next hour. With Jason Foster, I am Chad Holmes. It is the Big High School Sports Show on 98.9 WXCO, online at WXCO.fm, mobile devices, and Alexa by searching WXCO, and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to Bull Falls Radio.
WXCO 1230 AM, W255 DN Wausau.
And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Cammie McCormick. A gunman opened fire at an ICE facility in Dallas this morning, killing one detainee and wounding two others. They were in a van, and the suspect fired indiscriminately, according to acting ICE Director Todd Lyons.
Dallas Police Department and Texas Department of Public Safety did a great job with the ICE officers on the ground to secure that location. From all accounts, there was only one shooter involved, but the FBI will do their thorough investigation. They'll follow every lead, his associates, and see if anyone else was involved that time.
He identified the suspects as 29-year-old Joshua John. He left behind a bullet etched with an anti-ICE message. CBS News Justice correspondent Scott McFarland says it raises questions about the security of federal buildings.
That's one of 9,000 or so federal offices and federal companies.